This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you guys notice that we're all wearing black tees today?
Oh, I'm dark. It's dark blue, but it's
go tee.
Looking at this now, I'm like, oh man, this is an old t-shirt. It's all stretched out.
I know, my neck's a little loose. I'm looking shabby, dude. Shabby, although my mustache dude. Is back and it feels so good. Took down the rest of the facial hair.
I let it go for like a week. I shaved the other day. It doesn't turn into facial hair. It just progressively gets more and more like looking like you need to shave. It never crosses the threshold. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He somehow needs to shave and has no facial hair. I don't understand. Yeah.
That guy needs to shave. Are you saying he's got a beard? No, I'm not saying he's got a beard.
He looks clean shaven. He needs to shave.
All right, that's enough.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and the proud owner of 9 3/4 horses, Sean Roney.
I'm Edwin James, head accountant.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Life? Oh my God. Lock the doors, we're on full quarantine!
Of all of the vermin in God's great green kingdom, lice are the ones I detest the most. My first day of school, I had lice. And no one would play with me. For 15 years, they called me freak and four eyes and sci-fi nerd and girl puncher, all because I had lice when I was
girl seven. Puncher.
When he first says, what, lice? He just tosses a full cup of coffee just out of the side of the frame. That part of the office must be so stained with coffee from when he knocks Stanley's mug out. It's the same spot he throws this mug.
How many times have they had to change the carpet on that set with the yeah. you know them
yeah, then
ripping
Oscar
it up?
Oscar comes in and cuts it up and
mm-hmm. Todd Packer doing what that knows what.
Him spilling the coffee, spilling Stanley's coffee, spilling yeah. the coffee when he's drinking
when
with,
Dwight,
with his feet.
When Dwight owns the building and works there and he spills coffee, who has to pay for the coffee replacement or the carpet replacement? Is it Dunder Mifflin pays Dwight or does Dwight as the owner, as the landlord replace it?
They do have a janitorial staff.
I bet, yeah, Dwight makes Nate pay for it somehow.
There you go. Nate works overtime for it.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, reply the carpet.
Reply it. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, another mailbag. Thank you, everybody, so much. Thanks to all our listeners for sending us questions. You can send them to us on the Instagram, on the Twitter, on the email. We're all over the place, and we've collected some of our favorites to discuss today. First off, from Instagram, we got a message from Abhinav. Abhinav writes, who would you rather meet? A young Michael Scott from the Ed Truck handshake picture, or young Dwight Schrute from the picture with young Jim?
I love this question because it gives us two really specific points of reference.
I like that.
Help visualize. Yeah.
It's not just young Michael or just young Dwight. It's like, you know, from the day that they took that photograph.
Right. And us knowing who they become.
Yeah.
Right.
I think my first instinct was to go to young Dwight.
Same.
And I think it's because
I don't even think it's close.
Well, I think his upbringing would have been very strong in him. The farm life. And then what we see in early seasons from Dwight is a sort of wide-eyed, not gullible is the wrong word, but he's so willing to believe in werewolves and Jim's telepathy and anything Michael says that there's
I'll
like
take the wizard
enthusiasm, I guess we'd call it. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I would also think that Michael Scott is just a Todd Packer crony at the time that he's taking the picture with Ed Truck. He's probably just like this kind of, he's like Kevin with Todd Packer, you know, just like snickering in the corner mm-hmm. while he makes all these terrible jokes. So he might not be that interesting to know at that time.
I mean, Michael as an adult, just trying to get people to like him all the time would be really hard to be around, but it'd be even worse when he was younger. Right. I mean, we know that he didn't have friends. He wore suits to school. He was that kid.
And a perm.
And
by the end, the lunch lady was his best friend.
Exactly. So I think young Dwight is vastly more interesting. It gets vastly more complicated.
I am curious to know from the Ed Truck picture, what is in Michael's fanny pack?
Oh.
Oh yeah.
I'm imagining his Rolodex cards.
Yeah.
That Dwight later references.
Right.
On his sales calls, he can reach into the fanny pack and pull out his Rolodex card.
Yeah.
Condoms.
But they're Todd Packers. He just he has Michael store them for him.
He gave them to him on his first day on the
job. Love that.
Not.
Michael is wearing the shirt sleeves, like the short sleeve dress shirt in that picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think Dwight picks it up from that picture?
Oh.
Ooh. Possibly. I don't know.
I can't even go near a cigarette now without thinking of a penis, and vice versa.
That is a good point, because he wears the long sleeve, like, Henley shirts on the farm.
I'm thinking when Dwight also says he does. Less matching to appear more powerful or more wealthy.
Right? Yeah, right. It's got to be young Dwight. I mean, as
young
far
Dwight,
as
we're in agreement.
Like, yeah, you're gonna have a lot more fun with him. You could go smoke his hemp plants on his farm.
That was a really fun question. We're all in agreement. Young Dwight, thank you, Abhinav.
It would be the precursor to young Sheldon. The original spinoff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about old Michael Scott? Like finale Michael Scott or young Dwight.
No. Voiced by Stanley Michael Scott.
Thank you again, Abhinav. Let's move on to a voicemail got from Brandon.
Hey guys, this is Brandon from Chino in Southern California. I was just wondering, I'm watching season 3, The Job, and I was wondering what you guys thought as how the show would have gone if different people were to get that corporate job. So how would the show would have gone if Karen had gotten the job, or Michael had gotten the job, or even Jim? I wonder what you guys think, how the show would have turned out, or what events would transpire, especially as Dwight as manager so early. That'd be interesting to hear your guys' thoughts on that. Love the show. I listen to you guys every single day. I can. You guys release the episode. Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, Brandon.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, man. Thanks for listening. That's such a great question. Oh, man. So, like, a few things to break down here, right? Because if Michael gets the job, Dwight is the manager of Dunder Mifflin Scranton.
Congratulations, AWAC. Don't screw the food.
So that's in that scenario.
That seems like the biggest shift from the show.
That's
then
a
Michael's
huge shakeup.
Yeah, it's like that doesn't work.
And the possibility of that one seems very low.
It also seems like the one that they would have to address or change in the most short term. So that would be really funny for about like the first 6 episodes of the season.
Right.
And you'd get a lot more Michael and David Wallace, a lot more of Michael and I guess Hunter. Dwight would do something similar to shooting the gun in the office or whatever that moment would be.
Hunter's the new Ryan.
Yeah. And I think the show would have to fix it or correct itself to Michael being manager pretty quickly.
Are we assuming that, much like in how the show actually happens, that whoever gets this job, we're going to have them, they get it through season four, and then it's back to normal? Because that's essentially what happens, right?
Yeah, I think, more or less. As I was thinking through this, generally, yes. I think overall it would follow a similar shape. I think Karen Filippelli is the one that strikes me as having the most long-term potential, in that you could keep that dynamic going for quite a while.
Because because also you got to consider that you want to get Jim back to the office so that you can keep working on Jim and Pam. So you could have Karen Filippelli, and how interesting would that be? She's managing Michael, and Jim is still working there, and they've probably broken up, because he broke up after they hit his interview, or he didn't interview? Did he not go to his interview? I can't remember.
He does go to the interview. Remember, he has the Dundee, or the The Office Olympic medal from Pam, not the Dundee.
See, that's why I was thinking that maybe he doesn't go to that interview, because I kind of feel like in the end, like, maybe he doesn't really, like, fight for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because he starts to think about Pam.
He gets that note, don't forget about us.
Right, when you're famous, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Karen, I wonder what Karen would do to kind of get back at Jim in some sort of small, subtle way. Similar to the way that Ryan does when he calls him in and gives him that performance review.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I wonder if Karen had a little bit of that she could do for Jim.
Oh, dude, I was just rewatching today when Stanley is going to leave and they go to sabotage Utica. Mm-hmm. Which episode? What am I thinking of?
Branch Wars.
Thank you.
Utica.
Well, that scene where Karen...
I got my Branch Wars mustache on today.
Well, that scene where Karen is talking down to Jim, that would just be the dynamic for that whole season, that entire season four. And it would be, that would weigh very heavily on Jim and Pam's development.
Never has a man sunk so low into the thing he's sitting on.
In the middle of a couch. Jim,
hold back all the wrong things.
In her office and in the car when he's trying to hide from her.
Yep. He's just so
although that would be an interesting dynamic of having Karen come back regularly. Or as much as we see Jan, say, in season two. We see Jan, we'd see Karen. And
Ryan's a big part of season four with his Dunder Mifflinfinity and all that stuff.
It would be really funny if, say, Karen gets the job, and if Ryan became, like, obsessed with Karen, like, totally fell in love with Karen, and then, like, every time Karen came to Scranton, Ryan would make these huge gestures trying to be like, you know, you should be with me. Like, take me to New York. Please take me to New York and away from Kelly.
Kelly can move?
It would never happen. So that could be a funny dynamic. But, yeah, season four changes completely because – I'm guessing the Dunder Mifflin Infinity arc maybe isn't there, depending on who's doing it. I mean, you know, like, I feel like if Rashida Jones gets that role, they'd still have her show up from time to time. But if she was doing Parks and Rec, then it's hard to do that, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I don't know.
She is unlikely to, one, fall in love with Michael like Jan does, and two, not as likely to sort of shoot herself in the foot, commit corporate fraud like Ryan does.
If we were dealing with season seven, season eight, Daryl, that he would have gotten that job?
It's possible.
It could have been cool to have Daryl in that job.
He
doesn't,
but he can't even write a resume.
That's what I'm saying. If you took that stage,
that piece of it out.
Yeah. Or if, like, if he had proved himself by that point, you know.
Or him going to business school at night. I'm trying to remember. The Print in All Colors initiative, not Business School at Night. Business School at Night is Ryan. Print in All Colors is Daryl.
Right.
Daryl's a terrible...
Or could be Daryl.
Daryl's a terrible interviewer, though, even when he does Athlete in season nine.
Mm-hmm. Now that I'm thinking about Print in All Colors, so Daryl decides not to do it because he's only got a few years left for softball, right? What if he does do it and becomes a corporate figure? That's one. The second one is, what if Kelly, following her minority executive training program, Print in All Colors, goes into corporate?
Oh, totally. Oh. She could totally fail at this. Totally.
And has a role overseeing customer service across the company.
Some guy who runs the program's in love with her or something like that.
Dude, Kelly as Michael's boss would be so funny.
That would be fascinating. That's another one that feels like just like a one cold opening and she loses it. Like, you know, it's just, you get that Creed, that great Bratton cold open. And then
she spends like her whole signing bonus on like just clothes or something. And just
convertible.
She doesn't realize the company credit card is for company stuff. And so she just starts buying tons of stuff with it.
So there's one more thing to discuss here. And I guess that's if Jim gets the job, right? Is that something that you'd like to see? Because now what we've got is you probably got Michael being a little bit hostile towards Jim's like being the boss now. But
you get another season of Jim Pam tension.
Tension? Because he could still date her? Because
those are good question marks you're using right now.
Well, because
they draw it out though. Like
because he leaves that interview, goes back to Scranton and asks Pam out on a date, right? Mm-hmm. Then the next day he gets the call, you get the job. Oh crap. Like, is he allowed to date somebody who's the receptionist at a small branch? Like, is that a conflict of interest?
So technically he doesn't withdraw from consideration, which is what he says he did.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Because then Michael says, oh yeah, me too.
Right. If we're considering like, if you want to just everybody who was up for the job, if you want to consider. Which of these would you have liked to have seen the most? Michael becoming but maybe of Michael, Karen and Jim.
I think to think about one more possibility around Jim is if they move the art school arc up and they have Pam go to art school while Jim is in corporate.
And then
the one issue with Jim going to corporate so early is that it flies in the face of this dynamic where he chooses Pam over this career advancement.
Right.
And has to figure out other ways to try to do that later on in the show.
Right.
But I wonder if that could have been possible. But to answer your question, the one that I would have liked to see the most is Karen.
Mm. Yeah, I think
so. Out of those three, I think that's the right choice.
I think it would have made for the best season 4 out of all.
It would have made for a very steady season.
Yes, lots of possibilities, lots of ways to go. Lots of fun seeing Karen try to control Michael Scott. That would be
There might be another element of Jim and Pam trying to hide their romance from Karen. I'm thinking of in Fun Run, season 4, episode 1, where let's say Karen, as the new corporate figure, comes down to oversee this event that Michael has put together, and Jim and Pam continually have to hide their romance from Karen as well.
Mm, I like that. Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of potential for and for comedy with Karen Filippelli, that job. So anyways, Brandon, that's a fantastic question, dude. Yeah, that's the other thing. Once Karen becomes Michael's boss, eventually they will start to date, and that would be interesting, right?
Oh, God.
Pops it on her shell like a dying star.
Yeah.
So I will see you up there in Viagra Falls.
Thanks again. Thanks again,
fantastic
Brandon.
Fantastic question. Thank you.
It's really, really great question, man. All right, moving on. We got a question from Graham on Instagram. I have one theory. I think Creed is trying to catch the Loch Ness Monster. My evidence. In gossip, Creed denies the fact that he has asthma and he won't be able to scuba if people find out.
If I can't scuba, then what's this all been about?
What am I working towards? In the seminar, Creed describes what the Loch Ness Monster looks like and the reward for catching it. When Andy's running that seminar to try and, you know, fish for new clients. Beans. Yeah.
Is that a little bird?
Yeah, I'm getting some birdie chirping. Nice.
Oh yeah, that is me. That's me. Do you hear?
Nice.
Do you want?
Yeah, no,
should
I
close
it.
My window? Okay.
That's nice.
So he says, "Let me know if you guys agree or disagree with my theory." Again, love the pod. Thank you very much, Graham. That's a great question, and I have heard this theory before. Have you guys heard this theory before?
Oh yeah, sure.
I don't know if I have. but
I think it's out there. See, this is one of those things where doing this show, and now I just talk to people so much about The Office outside of the show, where I'm like, did we talk about this or not? Like, I know somebody's was telling me about it. I think absolutely, and I hope that the writers were thinking about, I mean, okay, the scuba joke comes before the Loch Ness Monster joke.
Correct.
When the writers wrote the scuba joke, the joke kind of is like, yeah, what the hell is Creed up to? Then I'll have two chairs, only one to go. What's he up to? Like, how does that have to do with catching the Loch Ness Monster?
Creed's there to just have those fun jokes. They're just in there that don't have a lot of ramifications. They can just, it's a character where once you look at, you're like, they wouldn't say that. They wouldn't say that. Creed might. Let's give it to Creed.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether or not he's, how far you want to go into the theory, I'll go as far as you want to go. But
I do like the
idea. Bottom of the lake.
Yeah.
I don't know if the writers have to justify certain jokes like that to each other. Totally. Like, do they have to, like, but I could easily see someone being like, well, he thinks that he's going to find treasure. He's trying to find buried treasure or something like that. And it'd be like, oh yeah, totally. That makes perfect sense. That's his long-term like plan. Yeah. And that he'd be going for the Loch Ness Monster, that also fits. So I think, yeah, I mean, I guess I agree. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and, you know, Creed's printing fake licenses out of his trunk. He's, you know, who knows what he's doing down at the quarry. There's all sorts of mysteries around him. And one of them is, I mean, he is the Loch Ness Monster of the show. He's a total mystery. We've seen him. We don't know what he's about. We don't know how old he is, where he came from, where he's going. That's Creed, you know?
It is funny. Creed talks about being in an iron lung as a child.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that Phyllis? Oh, man, I don't want to get that wrong. Yeah, it was Creed. When I was a teenager, I was in an iron lung.
Okay, thank God.
But anyway. I love to think that old Creed has ties to, like, ancestral ties to Scotland in some sort of way. And this feels Great like Bratton. A couple of breadcrumbs that never got put together all the way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So maybe they set it up. Maybe they talked about it. Wouldn't it be funny if, but it never came to bear.
Yeah, for sure.
According to Ancestry.com, Bratton is a Scottish and Northern Irish name. So regionally, it's correct. They also have a heat map of where the most Bratton last names are in the U.S. and Pennsylvania is one of the highest.
Interesting.
So here we are.
That's some good research on there. And
thanks, only guys. One to go.
Top male occupation with the name Bratton in 1940 was farmer. There you go.
There you go. There you have it. And thank you so much, Graham, for sending in that question. Love that Loch Ness Monster Creed theory. Moving on, we have another fan theory. This one sent to us by Danielle on Instagram, but it is a post on Reddit by Cannibal, K-A-N-N-A-B-U-L-L. Andy Bernard has dissociative identity disorder and has the most evidence of being the Scranton Strangler. We have talked before on this show about fan theories. We have talked about Toby Flenderson possibly being the Scranton Strangler. That's a very popular fan theory. And that is even one that NBC has kind of embraced because they have a YouTube video on their channel kind of explaining the theory and kind of like showing all the evidence of it. I mean, obviously he's very close to the Scranton Strangler in the later seasons, but there's even kind of more little hints that he might be the Strangler. Now, this post is like crazy long, but I'll give you a couple of interesting highlights, okay? Because the other thing is that we've talked on this show about Andy Bernard and how his kind of like persona changes throughout the show. So this is an interesting idea. Now,
in the words of Michael Scott, give it to me in a way that a five-year-old will understand.
Right. I'm going to give you bullet points, and I'm happy to like post the link on Facebook maybe on Wednesday so that you can read it, because it must be like a dozen pages long or something like that for like episodic evidence of this thing.
Quick question. I have a quick question before you begin.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Is, you said dissociative identity disorder?
Yeah, and it is real. Is so multiple.
Is that what he has in my favorite James McAvoy film, Split?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's the new term for multiple personality disorder. And no, you know, we want to be sensitive to mental illness and stuff like that. You know, we're just, it's an interesting idea, and especially the way that they consider the way that Andy's behavior changes throughout the show, I think is interesting to think about. And then there's also an aspect of dissociative identity disorder where there's like memory loss, and there's
if you're coming to our show for nuanced mental health discussions,
please,
sorry,
we apologize in advance. So Andy, this is the basis of this argument. Mm-hmm. Andy has four personas: Andy, Andrew, Nard Dog, Drew, and the Nard Dog.
Okay.
Yeah, for real. So Andy is the dominant personality. He's naive, friendly, talented, charming, gets along well with everyone. Andrew is angry, spiteful, self-deprecating, pathological liar, manipulative, the kind of guy you really don't want to make an attempt to get to know. This is the Scranton Strangler personality, is the idea. Drew is a bit of a nerd, extremely talented, specifically in singing and other things, mm-hmm. smooth talker, level-headed, and wants people to like him, and the kind of socialite who brags about being an Ivy League graduate. Drew is especially dominant in like mid-season 4 when he's dating Angela, and he's like kind of trying to get into the Finer Things Club and things like that, you know? Nard Dog seems to be completely lacking of any notion of self-awareness, including of his sexuality. He likes to party. He has zero accountability and overlooks other people's emotions when his own are at risk.
So the Nard Dog tore his scrotum.
Yes, most certainly. That was the Nard Dog. So, dude, okay. So, anyways, what do you guys think about that? Just, I mean, off the bat, I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Because, like, Drew is what he wants to be called when he comes back from anger management.
It's Drew now.
Right. Andrew's maybe what his dad calls him, like, which is the personality that's kind of, like, psychopathic and all that stuff.
It's very interesting to kind of break out or divide or compartmentalize the different sort of shades of Andy that we see, because the transition from the character that he is in season 3 to the end of season 9 is so significant. And you can attribute some of that to anger management, but it still doesn't speak to the vast amount of character change that occurs over the, 6.5 seasons. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting the way that this has sort of broken that out.
It's fun to believe that all these things exist within him when we meet him and we kind of get to see it play out. Sorry.
The Nard Dog, like all of us, contains multitudes.
It is funny, just when you brought that up, I was trying to think of any, like, outside of Michael, who's just an entire spectrum on his own, of just, like, who else on the show do we see these distinct different personalities come and go? Because, like you said, the Andy in season 3, who punches through a wall,
is using a totally different rationale than...
He's very different, because you've mentioned this, Edwin, too, when he's, like, when he does the scene in Stamford of, like, I'm acting my heart out here, you know, when he's trying to get Jim to stand up to switch his chair.
Yeah.
And it's just like terrible job. He has zero sense of a performance and like how to do that in a way that wouldn't be suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then contrast it with like in Andy's play, and we see him singing and we see him actually performing and he's really good. And it's like, you didn't get good at that in the last 3-4 seasons. So it's like,
right.
Who is that person versus, and sure. He definitely comes in as Nard Dog as like more of a Cornell frat guy.
This thing goes on and on and on, and you can dig so deep into it. It's very interesting how much work this person put into writing this.
My mom is already a little disappointed that I do this show, so I can't imagine if I was writing
conspiracy
that
theories.
Like going that deep on.
But here's what. Okay, I just wanted to bring up this one point because I think it's funny and it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Andy killed Angela's cat, not Dwight. And due to the nature of repressed memories and dissociative identity disorder, it is why he can't remember the words Kit Kat bar from the Kit Kat jingle.
Wow. but he replaces it with Fancy Feast.
See? Right? Now,
he doesn't mind just like, I stole it. When he steals the ice sculpture.
everything that you could imagine is in this like breakdown of how this works. So anyways, two more things. I Try to Say Goodbye and I Choke by Macy Gray. Choke, Scranton Strangler. Closet full of me's. Dissociative Identity Disorder. Anyways, this is hilarious. I tried to read all of it. I did not read all of it. It is crazy. We'll post the link if that's the kind of thing that you might be into. But thank you, Danielle, for forwarding that to us, because I think the post is from a few years ago. So thank you. A
lot of Andrew in season 9.
That's what I'm talking about.
Actually, season 9, we get everything clashing, and they all become this cocktail called Baby Wawa, which is where he ends up at the end.
That's the fifth personality. That's
a little bit of all of them at once.
Baby Wawa. I'm interested in which persona wears the most pastels.
Ooh.
I don't think he's a snappy dresser. It's like every day is just
I'm going to go with the pistachio pants today.
All right. We have a voicemail from Ian.
Yes, we do.
Hey, guys. It's Ian from Indiana again. Been loving the podcast recently. Listened to every single episode just like always. I had a question for you guys. So I've noticed on a couple of the recent episodes that Edwin has been talking about some of your guys' least favorite parts, you know, season 8, season 9, Robert California. Like, the more he's watched it or the more he's kind of come back to it, he's enjoyed it more, and I kind of totally agree. Like, I've been watching
my man
episodes since I was in fifth grade. I've watched them for years, 20 times or more, and I totally noticed the same thing, where a lot of the stuff I didn't like at first, the more I come back to it, the more it becomes some of my favorite parts, especially the character of, like, Natalie, who I really, really hated the first time I saw her. She's become one of my favorites and part of the funniest parts of the show. So I'm just wondering why you guys think that is. Like, more exposure is leading to, like, enjoying it more. Is this something that you guys think is specific for The Office, or, like, have you noticed this in other shows? I just want to hear your guys' general take. Thanks so much for the podcast. I love what you guys are doing. Please keep doing it. Part of the best parts of my days when, you know, we're stuck inside like this. And just thanks for everything you guys do.
That's amazing. Dude, thank you,
Ian.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, man.
You know, everyone Edwin says, like, keep doing what you're doing. Like, they know that we're not making money and we might stop this.
Like, it'd be like very easy.
Everyone in their message is like, please keep doing it.
Oh, we have fun with it. So, hey, Edwin, that question was kind of directed at you. So you should respond first.
I mean, I agree that there is something to the effect of when you watch it more, you spend more time with it, maybe the jokes hit a little differently, or maybe you notice things you haven't before. I certainly find that with the later seasons. I think the tone is so different as the show changes and Michael exits, and Robert California sort of comes in to fill that vacuum, and his presence is so domineering in season 8. But I do think that when you do spend more time with those episodes, you do come back to them. I think they're so different from what The Office had been, even though it's the same characters in the same physical location, that's really jarring as a viewer the first time. And it's very easy to be turned off by a show changing so drastically, especially if it's a show that you love, I think we all do. But it definitely changes the balance of the show, where it's a little bit more equal in terms of, I think, screen time and storyline. The other characters in the ensemble get a little bit more of a voice. They have a little more bearing. There are multiple storylines going on in these different episodes. And the tone is different. The cinematography is a little brighter. The jokes are a little more comedically broad. The Lice quote that you played at the very beginning, Alex, is like a perfect example of this, of Dwight in a talking head. I feel like you wouldn't get that from Dwight in a talking head in maybe season 3.
Yeah.
Or jokes, the tone wouldn't have been exactly the same. Girl Puncher is so silly. The thing in the Lice episode where Dwight wears the hazmat suit and he drops the little grenade with a bug bomb in his office and then in his car, It's very broad, but it really makes me laugh every time I watch it. So,
it's such an immediate, like, it's yeah. So funny.
I'm going to count down from 10. Three, purple.
It's really good.
What do you guys think?
I think Ian asked if you've noticed this with other things, and I absolutely have, mainly with music, I feel like more than anything, where there's some music, maybe the first time I hear it, it's too dense, or I wasn't in the right place or the right mindset or something. And the more I return to it, the better and better it gets, which to me is a hallmark of great art and great creativity, is you can keep returning to it and it keeps offering you things every time you come back. I love Animal Collective, that band, and they're not for everyone, but there's something that, like, their music is so dense in a way that at first I was just like, what is this music? More I return to it, it gets better and better and better and better. Now, these seasons? I love it. Right. Yeah. And with season 8 and 9, it's like, it's not an accident, I think, that the actors they bring in, be it James Spader or Catherine Tate, are extremely good at what they do. And so, like, Nellie's this weird, all of this flavor in the show that kind of comes out of nowhere. And you're like, she's just like completely injected herself into the show. It's like, well, she didn't. That's how the writers, that's what they decided to do. And they brought in Catherine Tate. And as time goes on and you know that she's coming and you know that she's going to be there for a while, we just get to enjoy her performance. And she gets funnier and funnier every time I see it. Same with James Spader. I was like, I wish we'd have a lot more of James Spader. Mm. As opposed to, say, like reality TV is like candy, you know, like the first time you watch a season of The Bachelor or Love is Blind or whatever, it's like, oh, this is crazy and entertaining and it's so good. But if I went back and watched it, I would just be like, I can't handle this. This is so bad.
Dude, I would even say, like, I mean, reality TV, it could be an easy target for that. But even like a lot of drama out there, it's like, do you really want to go back and rewatch? Sure. You know, like, I don't know. The comedy is so surface. And then as you rewatch, you start to find all these subtle things that they're trying to say.
You know that person
stories more. That they're telling you. Yeah.
It's like friends you've had a long time, or it can make you laugh harder because they just know you just have, you don't have to say as much stuff. It's just funnier.
Yeah.
And that's the way with The Office.
I feel that way when you talk about having that same sort of phenomenon with different things. I feel that way about The Simpsons. And granted, I watched The Simpsons a ton when I was growing up, so maybe it's a little bit different. And I watched a lot of reruns and really out of order, but I feel such an affection for the beginning of the show and the Simpsons up to about season 9, where the tone changes and it gets a little bit more, a little more broad. I keep saying that, but I still really love Simpsons seasons like 9 through 15, 16. It's a different show, frankly. And it's an even more different show now because they're still on the air. And I don't, you know, I'm not as familiar with some of the more recent seasons, but when you talk about segmenting like that, seasons like 3 through 9 for The Simpsons for me is something that, you know, I really love personally, but then seasons, I guess, 9 through 15 are something that I love, but it's different. I see it differently. I appreciate it differently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not the purest form.
I think that I totally agree with Ian, like, and you guys, that the more that I watch 8 and 9, it's like
8 more than 9.
Well, I just think that rewatching it, I'm always like, wow, I wasn't ever paying attention to this part because I didn't like it as much. And so I zoned out, or I missed a joke or something like that, or I forgot because it's so dense. But what this question makes me think about is this why 8 and 9 are the way that they are? Because the writers are so used to the show and so used to the characters. I mean, it's like, we're saying that we get used to 8 and 9 after several rewatches. Well, they did several read-throughs and rewrites and you know, watch them film it and watch them edit it. And, like, you know, are people like Greg Daniels and stuff like that, are they just kind of like, no, let's, like, you know, let's get crazier. Let's get more experimental. We have rules. We have a universe that works. Like, let's explore it, you know? That's what this question made me think of. And anyways, I agree.
In season 8, it's for sure like that one that's really pushed and stretched and is different, where Paul Lieberstein is showrunner. And that isn't placing any sort of value on his choices or direction as showrunner. But I remember when season 9 came back, I think Greg Daniels returned as showrunner for season 9. And I remember reading a quote from him around the time The Office was about to come back for that final season, saying that it was going to sort of reset, maybe return to form a little bit, try to get a little bit closer to the physical location of Scranton, PA. And it does to a large extent.
Totally.
But it's funny, when we were talking about the potential outcomes for the job, and I was saying that Karen might be one of my favorite ones because it seemed like it set up a long-term sort of stable environment. That's not really the environment for comedy or the environment that The Office chosen most of the time. It often chooses the most dramatic outcome, and that leads to the most extreme choices. Think about the Michael Scott Paper Company arc where he quits, and everything is it relies a little bit on that sort of inciting action.
You'd rather have Ryan doing coke in New York and inventing a website that everyone has to use and it going terribly wrong. That's way better of an arc than a nice stable position and a Karen just doing her job well in New York for sure. Mm.
Well, I think that wraps it up for our mailbag questions. Thank you so much, Ian, for sending in that voicemail, man. Really appreciate it, and really appreciate everyone sending us in questions.
Absolutely.
We collect them, we try to respond to them, and we save them up for episodes like this. So please keep them coming in, especially now. We'd like to do some more mailbag stuff in the future with all this extra free time staying home. But let's move on to a new segment called Movie Monday. This is just where we're going to talk about like extra watchable content related to The Office. So
curated by our very own Edwin James.
Curated by Edwin James. We'll do deleted scenes. We'll do like extra little things that like promotional videos that they released during the time that The Office was coming out, those kind of like lost videos. But anyways, Edwin, take it away.
Hello and welcome to Movie Monday, a show.
Oh, we got a podcast within a podcast.
Show by fans of The Office for fans of The Office. I'm your host and varsity blues quarterback, Edwin James. On this first installment of Movie Monday, part of the inspiration from this was someone who sent us a message. I am so sorry that I don't have your name right in front of me, but I'll get you later. Recommending that we talk a little bit more about deleted scenes. And he made a great point that deleted scenes added a lot to the show, and maybe it's hard to build a full episode around them, especially when not everyone has seen them. So part of my rewatching time has been watching deleted scenes, and particularly one that I wanted to recommend to all of you is the deleted scenes for Woof.com, which is season 7, episode 9. That is Hey Place. And of course, Ryan's attempts to get everyone to invest in, and then eventually selling off Woof.com.
Excuse me, get off of there. Those are show bales, not play bales.
It is the source of a ton of great drops for our show. You get a lot of extra Dwight as Hey King moments. You get...
Pamela and P.P. Halpert!
I won't give you a ton of quotes just because I want you to watch it, but there's a quote where... Nate says to this woman that Dwight has brought in his Mother Earth or Mother Harvest. Mm. And Nate says to her, do you like dogs? I have like 8 dogs. And then Dwight says to the camera, hey, place romances never last. You also get in this, I thought this was very interesting just in terms of the overall scope of the show. We get Michael tagging in to do more counseling with Toby. Going to Toby and getting more counseling. And we get to see an incredible example of Michael logic where he starts at one place and he ends at one place that you would never expect. And then it ends with an incredible Toby slam. So I highly recommend it.
I can't wait.
It's only a few minutes. So that's the first of our Movie Monday recommendations.
Beautiful.
Woof.com deleted scenes. Go and check them out.
It's on the
YouTube.com. Moving on to another new segment. This is Corona Corner.
I forgot what it was, actually. I was exciting.
Welcome to Corona Corner. If you're listening to this in the future because you've discovered us, now through our television show and our merchandise, and you're listening back to this, this is happening during the coronavirus sort of stay at home, self quarantine, self isolation.
I put recordings of our show onto flash drives in bottles, and then I throw them in the ocean. So if you found one of those.
Yes. Right now, our food supply is still stable. Yes. We're still functioning as a society.
It's April. The year is 2020. Mm-hmm. So these
houses are here anymore.
This is kind of a coronavirus check-in. So we did get a message from Becky. She says, I was wondering if any of you are working from home with your significant other right now. If you are, how are you enjoying working and living 24/7 with your partners? I always wondered what it might be like to live that sort of life. Jim and Pam make it look pretty great. No major complaints for me and my husband, but I'll be happy when I can go back into the office again. and the subject for her email was like Jim and Pam's dream come true or something like that. But there's a few things here. First of all, working from home. I am not working from home. How are you guys enjoying working from home? How's it going?
I'm working from home. It's okay. It's not ideal for sure. It's wearing on me a little bit the last couple of weeks, just not being able to interact with people and literally being stuck in the house. It's tough, especially when you're on. It's a funny balance of wanting a little bit of Zoom calls where you get some human interaction, see some faces of people, you know, your coworkers. But at the same time, like a day full of Zoom meetings is very exhausting. So trying to find the balance, but I'm glad or I'm grateful, you know, to be still be working, of course. And then it gives the days some structure and shape. That is much, much needed.
It's a good point you made about Zoom calls all day is exhausting because you wouldn't think so. It's like you're still at home doing whatever you do. But when you have meetings at the office or you're talking to people at the office, you don't have a camera pointed at you the entire time you're meeting. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's not these awkward pauses you have to be paying attention to and like finding the time to speak. So it's like it is a whole separate amount of issues. But
definitely.
I'm different because like I've said before in the show, I work from home anyways. So this hasn't actually interrupted my own schedule in life too much. My partner, she is a nurse in the ER. So she's
shout out.
Big shout out to her. And so she's at the hospital. She's working nurse's shifts. So she's working basically 12 or 8 hour shifts. And she's still at the hospital she's at. She's only been there, less than a couple of years now. So she's still working a lot of nights. So it works for me. So I haven't had it much experience working at home with a partner.
Sure.
But Sean, I know you and Ryan aren't working, but you guys, you live together. And so you're not working together.
And two things, I kind of have a Jim and Pam scenario. I mean, Ryan and I are always working together. You know, like we both work in the film industry and both work. Portland's a small film industry. We usually work together on the same TV shows or same movies. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course, during this time, we're not working. We're not, no one's making television productions or anything like that. So we're just kind of waiting it out. We did just get a kitten this week.
Oh, let's see.
Adopted the kitten.
Is it?
I'll have Ryan bring her in here.
That'll get him on YouTube.
That'll be on the video posted on YouTube. Sorry, we didn't do that last week, but this week we'll be back.
Well, we should still post. We're still going to post.
We'll post last week too. We will.
Is her name Princess Lady?
Well, we joked about that too, man. We were like, we thought about Comstock actually. Really considered that one. I was really fighting for Garbage, but
is great. Yeah.
But actually raising a kitten during this time or like adopting a kitten during this time, it's been so f***ing perfect for moving all the furniture out of the living room and just sitting on the floor, the office running all day and night. Like on a low volume. Yeah. So that, oh my gosh, today we were watching the episode where Dwight defeats the computer and Andy with the air horn. Oh, the kitten was freaking out. So
I bet.
So that's what it's been like. And thank you, Becky, for sending us, that message and that, I'm sure you guys are having a great time. You and your husband.
I think a lot of people aren't though. I mean, I wish we had a little more griminess to share. Cause I think it's probably a massive challenge for people.
I know it's tough, man. It's tough.
I saw something that said, be sure to check in on your mom, make sure she's doing well and send her flowers. She's stuck inside with your dad.
There we go. Yeah. Hell yeah. Somebody send Becky some flowers. No, seriously, to everyone else out there, like, send us how you're doing, and you can always check in with us. We'd love to hear about what you're rewatching too. I think we posted that on the Instagram the other day. Just like, you know, tell us where you're at right now in the season,
or your office habits, and like, what are you doing while the office is on? Now that are you like working out at home while the office is going on? Or have you figured out a new routine based around just having the office on in your house?
Yeah. Do you guys have any closing Corona Corner thoughts or any?
This question was a perfect sort of setup to kind of have this little moment, this little sort of corner to talk about what's going on with us in between this time. I thought it might be fun to just kind of have a recurring segment. We could talk about, what's going on with our work lives or just in general, or maybe what we're watching now. Obviously been watching a lot of the Office deleted scenes. It's been kind of my new thing. I love The Last Dance. It's been something I look forward to on Sundays, but
The Last Dance?
Oh, it's so good.
That's so good.
Oh, you'd love it, Sean. It's all about basketball.
Michael Jordan, 98 Bulls. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. I've been watching Dave on Hulu, and I've been watching
Ann and I are got a lot of momentum going through Insecure right now, which I haven't seen before.
It's pretty great. On HBO.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, for
loving
sure.
It. I'm loving it. But yeah, Last Dance has been the main thing, and also some catching up on High Maintenance this past season.
I started watching Schitt's Creek. It's pretty good. I like
really like Schitt's Creek. And that's a great show that's kind of like in the Office. It's kind of like an ensemble cast. You kind of get the same little universe of their little town. That's a really good show. I love
anything with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara together is fantastic.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Legends. They are legends.
Life update too, just for me, because I'll be, so Anna and I bought a house, we're sort of moving into it, and at this point, I think the upstairs room, or at least part of it, I'll be turning into a new workspace and studio. So we may have a little more of a dedicated recording space for us, and we can put up our decorations, the pillows. I got the Dundee here, Sean's picture. We can have a little bit of, and a little office studio, which will be great. And then once I convert the garage into a finished room, that will then be where we really bone down. And
I'm so excited.
Bone down.
Man, I'm so excited, man. I gotta be honest. Like, I'm glad that we can still record these, but it's nothing compared to being in person with you fellas. And I miss you deeply. I can't wait to do that group hug around the table and record an episode in person. Before we end today's episode, I just want to say a bunch of people have sent us this TikTok video. It's from a couple of weeks ago now. My sister Bridget sent it to me, several people through almost every social media thing we've had have sent it to us. So we're going to play that song at the end. It's somebody playing the Office theme song in 10 different genres.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So go. It's really easy to look up. I think his name is William St. Goldsmith on TikTok, but you could... The Office theme, 10 genres. You can find the video online. But anyways, thank you to all of our listeners for sending us these questions. We love doing these mailbag episodes, and you guys are the ones who make it possible. Please send us your questions and your comments. Call us. We have a phone number. You can leave us a voicemail, and we play them on the show, 503-694-9314. Email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter, at Michael Scott Pod. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs our artwork. And this episode was recorded over Zoom video chat, Portland, Oregon.
Safely social distance. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, for interacting with us, for rocking with us. We appreciate and love every one of you. Stay healthy, stay safe. Take care.
Pippity poppy, give me this up.
Yes, sir.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island, USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.